Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, I'm Hugo Monnier and welcome to the Rugby Tonight podcast. This season, we've got a brand new look. As well as all the best bits from our studio show included exclusive interviews with the likes of Lions superstar Mara Tojo, we'll also be recording an exclusive pod with two of the Rugby Tonight team, analysing all the biggest stories in the game, and we'll be looking ahead to this weekend's matches from the Aviva Premiership and beyond. And this week, I'm joined by none other than Mr. Ben Kay, who enjoyed three fabulous weeks in New Zealand down under covering the Lions tour. How was it?
Oh, terrible. Don't tell the wife. It was absolutely brilliant. Yeah, the New Zealand, such a welcoming country. I think the fact that they haven't got enough hotel rooms and everyone has to pitch in and just made it just an awesome atmosphere. And the amount of Lions fans that travelled down there, it was a lot of fun.
We saw you having a lot of fun on stage before the games. What was the atmosphere like in the stadium if it was that hype?
Genuinely, I know this gets banded around and stuff. I have never seen an atmosphere like it at a rugby game. It was, you know, that when you go to watch the big European football nights and things, it was akin to that. That I think because people had invested so much themselves to get down there, people had spent their life savings getting down there, they were going to have a good time. New Zealand was a really welcoming place, and I've never heard an atmosphere like it. Hairs on the back of the neck stuff.
That's brilliant. And right before we get into it, here's a little tease of what you can expect on this week's podcast. It's Omaro Itoje, as well as England's women's star Natasha Hunt, Lions wing duo Jack Noel and Anthony Watson, as well as Bath new boy Freddie Burns and his clubmate Matt Banahan, as well as London Irish director of rugby Nick Kennedy, all involved.
You know, we put ourselves in a position to win the game with a minute to go, and we unfortunately messed that up.
All of a sudden the Kiwis walk in with their medals around their necks, and it was quite a difficult one to look at, I'm not going to lie to you.
Maybe Hayden Thomas from the club, because he quite often likes to chuck himself into, you know, Bobby Moore's for the night and just sleep out there by himself, so he's a bit like a Bear Grylls or something, isn't he?
You know, I might get that call one day and get back in the England shirt, which would mean a great deal, but for me it's just enjoying my day to day and my week to week, which will be Bath Rugby.
For us, look, we want to win the Premiership. Every team here today wants to win the Premiership. It's why we do it.
Well, a brand new season involves some brand new players. There's been some massive signings in the Premiership. Let's look at Liam Williams, the likes of James O'Connor, George Ford, Freddie Burns, switching clubs. But for you, Ben, who's recruited the best?
I think it's difficult to say who's recruited the best because everyone's recruited for different purposes. I think Leicester, on the face of it, have probably got the most star names coming in. Maybe Saracens might disagree with that, but Saracens have done what they've always done, been prudent. Not too many people coming in to upset the balance of the squad, but real high quality in Williams, Callum Clark, Will Skelton coming back. He already knows the place. So that's great for Saracens. Leicester, they feel that something special is brewing. They've obviously, Matt Tamur was there last year but played one and a half games and that was it, so he's almost like a new signing. They've got Johnny May, they've also got the two Ford brothers coming in. I think as a pair that's quite important because obviously George Ford is going to go away with England, so that's big. But then you look at teams that have been more mid-table, and I think that Newcastle have really recruited well. Dean Richards sort of doing all that little manipulation that he does and tinkering that he does. And then Sale as well. Sale had a bit of a disappointment after the season before last year, and perhaps with Danny Cipriani gone, that was the spark that was missing in Fafta Clerk. And James O'Connor, who we hear might well play 10 for them, that's a pretty exciting combination.
isn't it great to be in a situation where the Premiership is so strong that we can attract some of the best players from around the world to come and play in, for me, what I think to be the most competitive league?
I think last year was so exciting as a and not just because, you know, the quality of the opposition going head to head, but the way that the game actually didn't go like Super Rugby. There was still that Premiership, the old traditional Premiership skills that we want and we want to keep in. We don't want to make it like basketball. But then you had the likes of Wasps tearing it up, Exeter Chiefs as well.
Yep.
You know, that we saw a shift from it being a solely whoever's got the best defence to you need the best attack to win this now, and then you have to combine it with decent defence.
Well, let's look at the top of the table. Obviously, won by Exeter Chiefs last year, but who will be Tard's contenders this year for you?
I think the same old suspects will be there. I think the top four from last year will be knocking on the door again. Wasps will be disappointed with how their season finished, with their flying start and then how they carried it on through the season. Saracens will be hurting after losing in the final. Do they feel they took their eye off the ball with the European endeavour the couple of weeks before? So they'll be wanting to make sure that, you know, for them it would be a disaster to have more than one season without being champions. So they will want to come back in. I think Leicester will compete. I think the signs of them in pre-season has been good. There's a great feeling about the place with Matt O'Connor coming in. And then, slightly left field, you always get one of these bolters that comes into the top four. I don't think they'll be right there up at the top, but certainly, as we mentioned before, Newcastle or Sale could well be knocking on the door.
That's it. Well, Newcastle, Sale were kind of jostling about in that mid-table. It's probably the most competitive area of the Premiership. The top four seem to be fairly locked off quite early on, but who'll be fighting it out for those European spaces?
Again, it's so difficult to say at this stage. You know, the pre-season games, as we know, mean nothing.
Yeah.
But I think there is almost more of a separation. The worry for some of the teams that have traditionally been down at the bottom is how well can they start? Because if they don't start well, the likes of Worcester Warriors, it's going to be a long, long season. London Irish as well, coming back in. They haven't got time to get used to playing back in the Premiership. And I think that's why they've made quite a lot of signings that are maybe guys coming towards the end of their career, but with a lot of Premiership experience, who've come straight from a Premiership team, that they don't have that transition time to get back used to the pace and intensity of Premiership rugby. If those two teams have a poor start, I think they're going to get separated from a group then. And if that happens, those teams can actually be more competitive because they're not worried about the drop. We've seen it before. When teams get into that mid-table with a bit of a gap between the relegation zone, actually, we see them have great seasons. So it's too difficult to call in the mid-table.
OK, well, let's move to the bottom four. London Irish, odds on favourites to go down this season. Do you think their squad's strong enough to be able to stay in the Premiership?
I think they can. Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be really difficult for them. They've brought in a mixture of those players that have that experience. They've got the giant coming in Langer, who they're hoping will give them a bit of the fireworks, a bit of that physicality and fear, that providing fear for the opposition. But I do worry slightly about them, particularly when you sort of compare them with Worcester, and Worcester just have that experience, and they start. There were times last year when Worcester were good, though Worcester have lost a couple of players that are going to dent them this year. Papa Ruskin's a big one there.
Yeah, it's a massive loss. I went and watched London Irish play a couple of times this pre-season. The biggest thing for me is that their squad size, or the quality within that squad's not as great as the other team, so their injury rate's got to be low. They've got to keep the players like Yuna Langus fit. I think Tommy Bell at 15 is going to be a big player for them. Alex Lewington on the right wing, another one. So if they can keep the likes of those guys fit, then they've got a chance. Petrus Duplessis going there. He's got he's used to probably playing 10, 15 games a season at Saracens. Well, it's probably going to have to up to 20, 25. Does he have the legs in what is an ageing body? So it's going to be really competitive. Just getting a feeling, let's switch to Gloucester just a little bit. I think they finished 9th, 8th, 9th the last four seasons. Are they going to be a bottom four club this year? Are they going to actually make that step up and be challenging for Europe and potentially further?
I worry a little bit about Gloucester. And some of that's down to, you just go on social media and you see what their own fans are saying about it. There's not that confidence about that about the place. I think losing Johnny May was a big loss for them, not necessarily on the field, but just in terms of the psychology of the place. Though Ed Slater has come in to do a job where they are lacking. They've got loads of exciting backs, but they haven't, over the past few years, competed physically enough. And again, on the same note, they've brought in a couple of props in Fraser Balmain and Ruskin as well from Worcester. They've spent big there. They've probably overspent on those front row players, which tells you where the main focus is. You know, other teams couldn't compete to hold on to them. Leicester would have kept Fraser Balmain. Worcester, I'm sure, would have kept Ruskin if they could. So they've obviously spent big on there. They need to sort that scrum out, make sure that's a bedrock for them. I think Ackerman is huge, because having not got Ferns, who they thought they had, that would have been a huge psychological blow if they hadn't replaced someone with the class of Ackerman coming in. His dad, though, how long is it going to take him to get up to speed as a Premiership coach? Because that's what we've seen with a lot of these Super Rugby coaches that have come into the Premiership.
Tom Coventry,
exactly. And he said what he couldn't get over was it's different tactics every week. In the Super Rugby, everyone's trying to play the same brand of rugby. Yeah. In the Premiership, you play one way one week, you play another the next week. So it's going to be a huge learning curve for him as well. But having said that, he's not coming in as the sole head man. He's got Humphreys there to help him manage that transition.
Yeah, OK. I'm going to put you on the spot slightly here, Ben. Who's going to be in the Premiership final? Who's going to win it? And who's your money on to get relegated?
Right, I'll go with relegated first, London Irish.
Okay.
Just because you'd always put money probably on the team coming up.
Yeah.
Premiership final, again, far too early to call. And people will say I'm being biased, but I think Leicester will be there.
Oh, you're biased.
I'm biased. I think really interesting whether Exeter can match those highs again or whether they have that second season syndrome. I just think Saracens will come back and it may be a Saracens-Leicester final. Again, because you tend to play better when you've already had a final, and a lot of these Leicester players haven't had a final for a long time, I'll say Saracens for now.
I completely agree with you. I personally think, and I'm not biased, and I'm not saying you are either, but Leicester lost three coaches last year. They had a lot of off-field distractions. Tom Young's a big story in that. But to get to within 90 seconds of being in the final, despite so many things being turbulent in and around you, I think they'll look at it, actually, and they'll look at it in a positive light. If we can compete to that level with a brand-new coach coming in and changing things in such a short period of time, what can we do when we've got a full pre-season? As you've already mentioned, Matt Tamura, brand-new sign, will feel like it. Manu will feel like it. Freddie Burns coming in. Johnny May, who, to my money, he could be top try scorer in the Premiership, depending on the amount of games he plays. I think emotionally they're in the best place. And as you said with Saracens, they had a pretty good season by most people's standard. Winning the European Cup for a second time is pretty sweet. But when you're as competitive as they are and used to winning trophies like they are, they'd have been gutted to have not been in a Premiership final. So I think those two, and looking at their squads allied with their mental state, should be in the final. But not balls been kicked yet. I guess we'll wait and see.
Okay, well, we'll see if you're right come the end of the season. Now, our man Craig Doyle caught up with London Irish's Director of Rugby, Nick Kennedy, at the Premiership launch to talk about his new role and the Exiles' prospects for the new season. Here's the best bits.
So what's your playing ethos going to be? Has there been a change in tack? Because London Irish were always the expansive risk takers. I think back to the days of Justin Bishop and Conor O'Shea and Niall Woods. It was play, play, play. Topsy is still here. He likes to play rugby that way. How do you think the team are going to play it?
We're going to build slowly. So last pre-season, we didn't do much work on our attack at all. It was all about getting our building blocks in place with our exits, with our defence, with our set piece. This pre-season, we time everything that we do in our training. So this on a curve, we are doing a little bit more attack now, but still our building blocks are our set piece and our defence. So whilst we do want to play some attractive, expansive rugby in the right areas and at the right times, for us it's still about a slow build. I'd imagine next pre-season, it will be even more attack. But at the moment, this is where we're putting our training time into.
Are you going to stay up?
Yes. Yes, I think we've got such a brilliant group of players that work extremely hard for each other. Passionate London Irish guys now, even the new ones that are Darren Darajuk, who's probably been here the least time. In a short period of time, I believe our players have been great at integrating the new guys and making them feel welcome, making them feel part of what we do. We do things a little bit differently, I like to believe. I've been in quite a few different environments in France, in Harlequins, a few different head coaches at my time, at my 13 years at London Irish. You try and take the best bits and try and build something special.
13 years at London Irish, and you've hit on something here that personally, as I'll admit, a London Irish fan, is very important, the culture of this rugby club. And I think that possibly waned a little bit over the last few years. And maybe it's the geography of where you play your rugby from at the Medeski Stadium. There are plans, I hear, a closer move closer to town and maybe just getting those Irish expats back in the stands again. Staying up is very important. It's integral to that long-term plan, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And for us, look, we want to win the Premiership. Every team here today wants to win the Premiership. It's why we do it. We want to experience those days looking at Rob and his team lift the trophy. That's what it's all about for me. That's what we want to do. But we're not naive enough to think, we got relegated last year. We were the worst team in the league. It doesn't change in a year. You don't suddenly become the best team. It takes time because you're dealing with the very best of the best. So it took Rob 7-8 years. And, these things do take time. So the building blocks in place is crucial. And that's not just our set piece and our defence. It's the off-field, our analysis team, our medical team, our S&C team. We believe that everything is in place. And now it's just slowly building our game, getting better and better year on year.
To me, about some of the young guys coming through, we should look forward to seeing in action.
So Big Joe Cognosiga, from schoolboy to England squad, Eddie Jones and Paul Gustard, Neil Hatley's, really saw a gem in Joe as we did when he was 16 years old. So I think he's going to be a future star for us. He's currently 115 kilograms, needs to slim down a little bit, but he has been injured very fast. But the thing about Joe is he's London Irish. He works extremely hard on his game. He wants to improve. He wants to get better every day. Stays out, trains as much as possible. So, with an attitude like that, he's only going one way. And then we've got, cracking academy boys coming through the system at 16s, 18s. Our senior academy get to train with us every day, everything we do. So a Jacob Atkins training with Jimmy Marshall every day, learning from him. A Matt Williams or a Tom Parton training now with Nalanga. He's an unbelievable try scorer. Just learning from these players is only going to see them in good stead.
Describe the emotions ahead of kick-off for a brand new Premiership season and a return to the Premiership, just for yourself and the fans and the club and what you're experiencing around you.
We're all really excited. We can't wait. We can't wait to kick off and get going. You never really know where you're at after a pre-season. And if you think we're actually a year and a pre-season out of the Premiership, we're curious. We're curious as to what the league's like now. We're excited. We're very ambitious. And we can't wait to get going.
And great to see you do it all with a smile on your face as ever, Nick. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Cheers.
Before we move on to our prediction, here's a great interview of Anthony Watson and Jack Noel, who we caught up with at the Aviva Premiership launch. This is absolutely gold. Their team certainly won't thank him for it.
Who's the hardest tackler in the team?
Courtney Laws.
Yeah, Courtney Laws, I think he'll give it to him.
Quickest player in the squad?
Johnny May and at Bath. What's the bar? Rocco. It's a mess, Rocco to give him.
James Short at the club, he's absolutely rapid.
Who's always the last in the pub?
Well, this guy. Or again, Semester Okadaguni.
Probably myself, and I'm always with Luke and Nicky.
Oh, God. Terrible combination.
How long do you stay at till?
I'm gone pretty early doors, especially when these guys start get going, I'm out. These guys are out of control.
Who's the hardest, toughest player in this world?
Toughest player? I'd probably say Billy Vunipola, and at our place, Francois Lowe.
Yeah, Billy V, and probably Julian Selby, because you could tell by the state of his face how many stitches and cuts he's had, and yeah, he's looking pretty hanging at the moment, so Julian.
Hanging? Oh, come on.
Well, he is. That's his nickname, hanging.
The strongest player?
I'd love to say James Haskell, but I can't do that. So yeah, I'll go Carl Sinclair.
Yeah, Sink. I think how much was he, I think he was benching at 150 on tour, so fair play to him.
Is there a lot of competitions people trying to get at the big end?
This guy loves weights, but
try and compete.
No competition.
No one's beating that.
Who's the gym bunny?
This guy.
The what? Gym bunny?
Yeah.
Slady.
This guy loves weights. 10-10s, anything to try and put some size on him.
Ready for the summer, 2018.
Preps already.
Who's the biggest rugby nerd?
Kyle Sinclair. Has watched every single Lions documentary ever.
Yeah, he comes out with some weird quotes, doesn't he? At the club, probably Henry Slade. He's just a bit of an awe, isn't he?
Who has the best rugby brain?
At our place, I'd probably say Rhys Priestland. He's very smart with rugby.
We're all pretty dumb down in Exeter, so yeah, probably no one.
Slady, bro, come on.
Nah, Slady's actually very dumb.
Damn. You said he's a Norse.
Yeah, but Norse, rugby Norse, he likes it, but he doesn't know too much. Oh, okay. It's not very street smart.
Okay. Getting some stick today. Who's the teacher's pet?
Jack Noel.
Genuine? Ask him again.
At Bath, who's the teacher's pet? Kane Palmer Newport. And at England, James Haskell.
Yeah, James Haskell. At the club, I'd probably have to say someone like Carl Rimmer, prop. He's always just sat at the front. Rob likes to get him to do little tasks for him.
Outside of rugby, which players are good at other sports?
Jonathan Joseph's pretty good at football.
Is he?
Henry Thomas is good at cricket. That's about it, really.
Are you good at any other sports?
Unfortunately not. I can just run, that's about it. Maybe I could do athletics, but that's about it.
Phil Dolman's pretty good at golf. Michele Campagnaro is a pretty good surfer, to be fair to him, but he's got the looks, hasn't he? So he kind of gets away with it.
Tell us something about yourself that we might not know.
I have a chemistry A level.
That's a lie.
Come on, bro.
He's just point blank lying. I'm very good at telling lies.
You chat rubbish, bro. It's true.
It's not. It's not true.
Go on, what's yours, Jack?
What was the question?
Tell us something about yourself you might not know.
You know pretty much.
Let me have a think. He has Luke Cowan-Dickie's surname tattooed on him.
A good story behind it?
Yeah, but one I can't tell you.
No comment.
No. Genuine, I cannot tell you.
You're trapped on a desert island for a year with one person. Who do you pick and why?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Knowles, you'd be up there, actually. He's got that survivor's instinct, yeah. And he likes living rugged out in Exeter and that, so... who else would I pick? At the club, I'd probably choose someone like Matt Garvey, just because I reckon he knows his way around that kind of situation. I'd be useless, though, so he'd have to drag me along.
You would be terrible.
Yeah.
Maybe Hayden Thomas from the club, because he quite often likes to chuck himself into, you know, bobbing moors for the night and just sleep out there by himself, so... He's a bit like a Bear Grylls or something, isn't he?
Why would you ever do that?
Because he loves it, mate. He goes out with his rifle and stuff.
And how would you two get on together?
Well, on a desert island. I think we'd be alright, wouldn't we?
Yeah, we'd be sweet. We'd be very chilled. We'd probably die after about 10 days.
Yeah, we'd probably get a couple of days because none of us could be able to do anything.
Thanks a lot, boys. That was
cheers,
awesome.
Cheers.
So that, as you said, it's one of those moments, is it, where you think it's a good idea. You sat next to your mate who's chivvying you along. And then you realise you're going to go home and face your mates. Because they were pretty damning, weren't they?
Yeah, they absolutely rinsed all of their teammates. I mean, Jack, fair play. I mean, they won the Premiership last year, but he won't have many friends left because he's basically called them all thick and do weird stuff. Like, I mean, camping's not weird, surely.
Mind you, well, yeah, it's not. It's not, as weird as having your teammates' name tattooed on your body.
Yeah. Do you know what?
He's not even the best, is it?
Yeah, he smoothed Dickie over that pretty quick. However, the one thing about Hayden Thomas is not a problem with camping, but why you just go out on your own with a rifle? Like, like what are you doing? Like, I don't mind just going to cinema on my own or whatever, but yeah, camping with your, with a rifle's just a little bit dodgy.
Well, we had Frank Tornier at our place. He went down to Perpignan, and Perry Freshwater said that he went missing for about 6 weeks, didn't turn up to training. And then one day he just drove in on a Harley Davidson, shot his Magnum into the air 6 times and disappeared again for another week. Then came back and everyone was too scared to say anything.
Are you joking?
No.
Joining Anthony Watson at Bath this season will of course be Freddie Burns. And when he made his switch from Leicester Tigers this summer, he invited us along to help with his move west. Here's the best bits of our chat, including a cameo from big Matt Banahan.
Yeah, it means a lot. I think it's actually still quite surreal sat here now, sort of doing an interview and looking out at the Rec, knowing it's going to be my home ground. But like I said, for me, there's that sort of romance of it being my hometown club, also sort of combined with like a huge excitement and ambition to take the club somewhere and actually do something. You know, win something with the club. So, you know, it's surreal, but it's an exciting time that lies ahead. You know, I was in the academy with guys like Guy Mercer, Matt Banahan, played at Gloucester with Stukey and Sean Knight, and obviously Mikey Van Vuren was at Leicester for a little bit. So there's, you know, there's a few boys around. I still have, I'm still quite good mates. I had a few pints on Sunday with Matt Perry, the old Bath fullback. So I've got a few old friends, old and new, at Bath, which is always nice and helps me settle in. I think I'm at a stage in my career now where I've developed into the player that I am. I kind of know who I am now, especially that last 6 months at Leicester. I felt like I really felt comfortable in how I was going to approach the game and what I am as a player. And I think that's key. I still think I can get better. I think as a player, you always get better. You don't stop learning. But yeah, I definitely feel like it's perfect timing for both myself and the club to sort of pull together and hopefully achieve some good things. Like I said, I've been happy with my form, you know, for the last sort of 18 months. I think obviously the last 6 months for Leicester went really well. But for me now, I've huge ambition to play for England. There's no doubt about that. But at the same time, for me, it's all about club now. I want to play well for Bath. If I'm playing well week in, week out here for Bath, with your likes of JJ and Ant Watson and those boys that are in and around the England squad, then hopefully, you know, I might get that call one day and get back in the England shirt, which would mean a great deal. But you know, for me, it's just enjoying my day to day and my week to week, which will be Bath Rugby. I think it could achieve a lot. I think, obviously, season before last, they had a very tough season and I'm sort of down near the bottom of the, after obviously the year they had before, it was a bit of a shock. And, you know, Todd and the rest of the coaching staff have come in and sort of started rebuilding the squad, and obviously just missed out on top four last year. So hopefully we just continue that and keep progressing. And you know, for me, the main thing is the core squad of players is the same. It's not a team in transition. It's a team that knows where it wants to go. It's a team that has players that are capable of taking it where it wants to go. And it's just about combining that and, you know, hopefully just achieving something great together.
Obviously, people you sign for the club, you want them to know that they want to play for the club. Being Bath's Freddie's first club, you know he wants to be here. His family's from here, it's where he wants to be, and it's good to have him back. And you see the pride that comes from him knowing that he signed here and he's excited to get back out here. He's only going to sort of come through the squad, and players that hopefully want to play at the weekend as well. The way we want to play, obviously last year we showed a few games how we wanted to play, and I think it will suit how Freddie wants to come out and show his skills. And with Reece and Freddie sort of rotating or playing with each other at 10-12, I think it'll benefit both of them to excel of how they want to play and hopefully push them both again at international status. If you look at the bigger picture, we finished well down the league the year before that. So coming back, being fifth in the league, challenging for top four, semi-final of Europe, that was a big step for us to go on. You can't go from where we were the year before to back in top four, challenging. You look at the team who won at Exeter, Wasps, they've built over 3 or 4 years consistently being up there and challenging. So we now know what it takes, and with people like Freddie coming in and other signings, it's just going to strengthen the bulk of the squad and hopefully lift us. The majority of the squad are still here from last year, and it'll give us an opportunity to go in. And if, like we said, if he can keep slipping these passes out the back of his hand and kicking his goals, hopefully we'll be back up there.
I think that's the thing for me as well, is the fact that the club's kept the core group of players together. It's not wholesale changes, it's not, you know, it's not a club going through transition. It's a club that has got a core group of players that they're trying to take forward that they see developing into, you know, a Premiership winning team. And for me, just to come in with a couple of other signings is nice to try and get there and, you know, try and bolster the team and add a little bit more probably experience now in my older age, and, you know, just a little bit more stability and depth to the squad.
I think, like you said, you just want to put yourself in the shop window. I think how he performed last year was obviously how Freddie wanted to play since his last England matches. So you keep knocking on the door for so long, you're going to get a chance. Obviously, at the moment, everybody knows that England at the moment are sort of gifted with 10, 12s in the world. So all you can do is keep performing week in, week out. And when one of them slip up or get injured, you're the next one there. So he showed all last year that his form was sort of consistent throughout the whole season, and if he can carry that into us for us this year, I'm sure he'll be there and thereabouts.
I think competition's good. I mean, I'm going to go straight from competing with Owen Williams to competing with another Welsh boy in Rhys Priestland, who's vastly experienced and proved last year that he's still a quality player. So, you know, I think competition is just there now. If you want to play Premiership rugby, you're going to be competing with some top players. So, you know, for me, I'll be excited to compete with Rhys and hopefully, you know, continue the form that I finished last season on. You know, I feel like I'm now at an age where I've matured. I now know myself as a player. I've gone through the sort of trial and error phase of trying to sort of maybe change my game and play a different style, and, you know, it didn't really suit me. But since then, I've, you know, back end of last year, I felt I performed well. And I'll always be a player who lives and dies by the sword, so I'll have a crack and hopefully have a little bit of a free rein to do so too. When Leicester was an option for me to continue there, obviously I did look at other options, and there was options for me to go abroad and you know, play somewhere else. But for me, the want and desire to win a Premiership is there. And again, that's the reason why I came to Bath, because I believe there's a squad there and a coaching setup and a club there that's striving for success. So, now I want to be a part of that, and no better place to do it than at my hometown club.
Right, so if you fancy yourself as a bit of a pundit, you can play along with the new BT Sport Predictor game for free, where you can guess the scores from each weekend's Aviva Premiership matches. For more details and full terms and conditions, go to btsport.com/predictor.
So Friday night's game is the first game in the season, live on BT Sport 1 4K UHD. Gloucester against Exeter, who are you going for?
I think Gloucester always start the season big, but I think they just might run out of gas, so I'm going to go for Exeter.
OK, I'm in agreement with you. Newcastle at home.
Newcastle, because they're at home, but Worcester won't be fazed by playing on their pitch.
That's it. Northampton recruited really well in the off-season, as have Saracens, and that game's live on Saturday, 1:30 on BT Sport 1. Saracens at home?
Could be an upset, but you'd be mad to back against Saracens at home, yeah.
Worcester losing finalists from last year, looking decent in pre-season, up against Sale at home?
I think it'll be a massive high scorer, but I think Worcester will come out on top.
That's it. And we've got the double header live from Twickenham, both on BT Sport. London Irish against Quins.
Quins, just because of their experience of the Premiership and the fact that London Irish would have loved that to have been an actual home game.
That's it. And your old team, Leicester, going up against Bath. The story of inner stories of Freddie Burns and George Ford having switch clubs go head-to-head weekend one.
Just because of Leicester's performances in the pre-season games, I'm going to go for Leicester.
Brilliant. Should be a fantastic weekend of live sport, and you can catch the highlights at 10:30 on BT Sport 2 on Saturday. To kick off the new season on BT Sport, we invited the man of the moment, Maro Toji, into the studio for a chat with us and Craig. Here's what he had to say. So we've had loads of questions in, all for you, Maro. People that want to get to understand and see what goes on. So the first from James Cooper, who's live on Facebook. Maro, have you kept hold of Bill, and Bill being the mascot from the British and Irish Lions tour?
Yeah, I have, actually. He's very safe at home. He's in my wardrobe at the moment. He's with the rest of my clothes, so he's safely protected.
Some grass in there and stuff, so he's comfy, or is it just on top of your wardrobe?
No, he's actually in it. There's a bit of room in there, so he's there, comfortable.
It's not
no
real,
grass.
Benny. It's not real. Grass.
Yeah.
He's probably a lot safer at home, because on tour they try and sabotage you, right, and make sure that you lose it, because there's fines associated to losing Bill.
I'm not even going to lie, it was very stressful.
Tougher than the games?
Not quite.
Is it like an Olympic torch? Does the same one go round, or do you keep that forever?
So I fortunately get to keep it. So Stuart Hogg got to keep his, and I've made sure I've got to keep mine as well. So it's nice to have, you know, a good little bit of memorabilia from the tour. But yeah, got to keep it.
Very good. Okay, we've got another question from Twitter from I'm a Realist. Maritoja, how did the Lions camp differ from an England camp?
It was different due to the very nature of what it was. Obviously, with a Lions camp, you're spending time with people from four different nations, whereas England's the only one. So you obviously get these different kind of, like, you know, obviously dialects and trying to understand people. I remember when I first rocked up, I was sitting on a table with Welsh guys and Scottish guys. I was like, sugar, I can't understand what these guys are saying.
is there a difference? People talk about keeping the Lions heritage of having a social tour, but also doing the professional side of things now. Is there a difference there? Was there a bit more opportunity to go out and let your hair down?
Yeah, the Lions, it was definitely a lot more loose than what I was used to. But it was good, you know. We got to spend some time off the field with each other, you know. It's not, you know, to go on a Lions tour to New Zealand is, you know, it's quite rare. So, all in all, it was a good experience.
Just how wild? How wild did it get?
It got very wild after the last test.
Really?
It was all controlled up until then, but after that, it was.
Go on. Yeah.
We'll save it for after. Got another question, Greg Miller, Facebook. Mauro, so what's going through your head when New Zealand perform in the Haka?
So with the Haka, obviously, it's you know, it means a lot to New Zealand players, and as you know, it's for the All Blacks. It obviously gives them strength. Has a whole load of spiritual meanings to that. But for me, obviously, I'm not from New Zealand. I'm from here, and so I don't have the same connection they do to it. So for me, I watch it, try and be respectful, but ultimately it's what happens on the pitch that matters.
The Haka essentially is a dance then which gets them rived up. And he said, you're not from here, but your roots and heritage is Nigeria. One thing I've seen, you're a super talented guy, do lots of things, but you can dance as well. Hey, this isn't a stitcher. It's more, I'm just seeking a bit of advice, because we've seen the celebrations in the changing room where you're up and... Can you help me? can you just stand up and just talk me through, like, what I need to do?
Am I right in thinking you should start with this top off?
So how does it go?
No. Am I gonna do this?
Yeah. Question, Nick Larkey from Twitter. Who's the toughest opposition second row in the Prem or Champions Cup?
In the Prem, I think it has to be one of the, you know, other England locks. Obviously, I play with Cruzo for both club and country, so I don't have to go up against him. But I'll say Courtney and Joe. They're definitely you know, two top class operators.
And on the European level?
European level, they tend to be a bit bigger in Europe. They tend to have a little bit more meat on them. So it was difficult last year. I don't even know.
Didn't even notice them, you see. Do you know, I noticed something about you, Mauro, watching one of the matches on the touchline last year, how vocal you are on the pitch. Do you realise you're even doing that?
Yeah, I'm the one who's talking.
No, but sometimes you're just shouting. Sometimes it's just this raw kind of energy coming from you.
Yeah. Funny, because Craig talks a lot, but he doesn't know he's doing it.
And I don't understand it.
you know, I think it's something I actively try and do. You know, I try and, you know, give my team energy, you know, first and foremost through my actions, but I think through your voice and through the way you speak to and influence others is another way you can do that.
Absolutely. Okay, another question, Facebook. Ashley Shingler, if you could pack down of anyone past or present, who would it be?
Good question.
Well, it's a bit brutal. You've not automatically answered that with Brenny Kane. Just that. You're like, good question.
Yeah, good question. Past or present? In the row, I assume.
Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
Growing up, I was a big fan of the South African locks, Victor Matfield, Bakkies Botha. You know, I really respected what they did. I think it would be pretty cool, obviously completely different eras, but John Eales, yeah. I think that would be quite an interesting pat down with, you know, the big man in his prime. Yeah. I think that would be quite cool.
Well, he was another very athletic second row, wasn't he? He was kind of ahead of his time to a certain extent, I suppose. Who's got questions for Mara? Oh, you do. Don't fight over it, boys. Just, you know, don't fight over him. What's your name, sir? What's your name?
Steve.
Steve, far away there.
How good was it to see Alan Wynne-Jones singing your song?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I think he was doing it more in jest than trying to glorify me or anything like that. But yeah, you know, I think our teammates down there, you know, were very, you know, very loving, very caring, and you know, I think it showed in our performances.
Loving and caring, rugby hasn't changed, has it? Rugby has aged. Good question. Next question. Yes.
Mara, you're obviously a very established and accomplished traveller all over Europe. You've been marauding around with Saracens. Have you settled on any particular roommate? And why have you chosen?
I normally room with Jamie George on away trips, mainly because he was the first person that I roomed with when I got into the Saracens team. And we've been, generally the results have gone our way in those games as well. So we tried to keep to a winning formula.
Who did you room with on the Lions tour, by the way? How did that work?
Yeah, so I had quite a few roommates. I roomed with a few of the second row, so George Cruz, Alan Wynne, Ian Henderson, Tommy Seymour for a couple of days. Yeah, so a few guys.
Smelliest.
No, they all smell like roses.
Okay, I'll go down that road. Another question. Who's got a question? There you go, sir.
Mara, now you've finished your politics degree, what are you going to do in your spare time?
Oh, good question. I don't really know. I think I'm not quite.
Thing out?
Not quite. Only God can save that one. yeah, so I've got a bit more free time on my hands. Obviously, I'll just use it to focus on the rugby, more analysis.
Can I ask you a quick question about Saracens and how they might play in the season ahead? Because I've heard some of the camp saying, you know, we focused so much on defence last year. Maybe we can ease off that a little bit, maybe up attack. Liam Williams there, great broken play player in broken play. How do you think he might play it?
Well, I think defence has always been the foundation of our game. So whatever season, whatever game, that's always going to be the foundation. And I think if you've looked at Saracens from 3 years ago to where we are now, I think we're much more attacking side than we are, and obviously we're going to continue to build that side of our game. So it's, you know, we believe our defence helps attack, and when we attack more, obviously we don't defend as much. So
I think all teams are trying to move to a more attacking game. If you look at traditionally, yes, you could win a premiership by just having a great defence and stopping everyone else scoring, but the way world rugby have changed the laws, and we've seen the laws changing again to make the game faster. Who finished top last year? It's the two teams that scored the most tries, and that's becoming a trend in all rugby throughout the world. So, you know, the traditional sort of Leicester game is changing to a more attacking game. Saracens, they're trying to play more attacking rugby. Everyone is trying now to score more points, you know, score more tries, because that is the way that you're going to win a competition.
I've got a quick question, Mara. Clearly, Saracens had a really good year last year, winning the European title once again, being able to retain it. But I guess in the manner in which you guys lost to Exeter, emotionally, you'd have been absolutely devastated with that. But having time to reflect on it, how do you assess what happened last year? Was it two thumbs up, or were you guys still mentally disappointed that you didn't win the Premiership as well?
Obviously, that Exeter semi-final was like hugely disappointing, especially in the manner in which we lost. I don't think we played our best rugby that game, but you know, we put ourselves in a position to win the game with a minute to go, and we unfortunately messed that up. But I think you can't really pin a whole season down on one game. If you look at the season as a whole, with the European Championship, with our performances throughout the league, I think there's lots of stuff to be positive about, and I think that's a solid foundation of which we can build on this year.
Well, I don't know about you, Ben, but Marrow is a seriously impressive guy. Had an outstanding series with the Lions. What are your takes on him?
Look, he's a global superstar already. He could well, with his age, be the greatest player England have produced. You know, probably look at Johnny Wilkinson and Martin Johnson in that vein at the moment. But you know, his age profile coming through, if he can stay fit, if he can stay on top of the changes in the laws and every the way the game goes, he's got a bit of everything about him. So the thing I like about him is he must be a coach's dream, because whatever you ask him to go out and do, be that the big tackler or the big ball carrier, he will adapt his game to do. So very coachable, and obviously hugely intelligent as well, and a supreme athlete. So, yeah, is he an icon already? Do we think he's an icon already? I think it's too early for that. I think he needs to be around for sort of 5 years, playing at the consistent level he is. And then, you know, we look at the likes of Kieran Reid and people like that. When you're around and all the great players, it's consistency, isn't it?
Yeah, I completely agree. Icon's probably too early. You kind of wonder, and perversely just thinking, if he stopped playing rugby today, what would he be remembered for? He'd be remembered as a brilliant athlete that burst onto the scene. And you're right, it's that consistency over a long period of time. But he's 6'6", dreadlocks. He's played out on the Lions tour, and pretty much the whole stadium sang his name. He's certainly on his way to that icon status.
He's got that fear factor for the opposition. That's how you tend to tell, because we get carried away, we see all the players. But it's when you go to another place and you hear what they're saying, and you know, the first name probably the Kiwis you'd bump into were saying is, oh, is Maro Itoje going to play? And that's, like you said, it's that stature of people, isn't it?
Keeping the theme of Saracens, Mark McCall just a couple of weeks ago had rose this debate about salary cap and said that homegrown players such as Maro shouldn't count towards the cap. And I kind of agree. If you've invested so much time into them, then you shouldn't get penalised for them actually reaching their full potential. In saying that, Owen Farrell signed a 5-year deal. So before any of that argument really went anyway, they've locked him up. They must be absolutely thrilled with that.
100%, they had to. I mean, that was he would have been one of those players that would be sought after. I'm sure he's had huge offers from France. But the thing about a club like Saracens and Leicester in my day used to have it, if you can make it where the player really wants to be there, it is worth a certain amount of money. Yeah. So, you know, I know that I could have earned more money if I'd gone to other clubs, but I wanted to win premierships. I wanted to win European Cups. And I also was happy in that environment. And obviously the Saracens boys are extremely happy in that environment. But what's he be worth? A lot more than Saracens will be paying him over the next 5 years. He could go to France and easily be 750 to a million. Maybe you'd be looking at a million euros over there for him when you compare him to the likes of Dan Carter and what he can do in this moment in any team, particularly that ability to stick to a game plan and manage the game. You know, that he is the difference between you making your final and not making your final.
It's quite interesting. When you look at the Premiership, you get a player like Owen Farrell signed a 5-year deal. That just breeds confidence to every academy player that they've got that solidity and that platform knowing he's going to be around. It also sends a great precedent and example to everyone else. Well, if he's signing, I'll sign. You kind of compare and contrast to what happened at Gloucester, homegrown talent in Johnny May, who said, actually, I'm not going to be able to achieve everything that you've just spoken about you wanted to achieve at Leicester. And he's gone to a club where he feels he has that. That must dent the hopes of some of the academy guys. I guess the only antidote to that is get on the pitch and prove Johnny's decision to be wrong.
Yeah, but you know that's always been the case. And we've had the salary cap for years. And you know, you think back to when Saracens didn't have that sort of culture. And they were the team that brought it, you know, went and stole the best players off teams that had developed them. So they can't really have it the other way now that, oh, well, there's no point in developing the players. Northampton a few years ago, you remember, they had a really strong 15, but it was the year after all their players like Courtney Laws had developed from an academy player who, you know, let's throw numbers out the air, might have been on 30 grand at the time, and suddenly he'd be wanting 150 grand. So if you've got to find 120 grand from somewhere, you've then got to let other players go, and it weakens your squad, shrinks then to keep the players that you've developed and brought through. And that's why the academy system at clubs is really important. You can't, because of the salary cap, you can't just go and steal players. You have to have that pathway coming through every year of 3 or 4 players that are good enough to play first team rugby. And that allows you to lose some of the club players to finance that. Right, we're delighted to be joined by one of the stars of the women's game, fresh from a Rugby World Cup campaign that saw the Red Roses reach the final, watched by a TV audience of nearly 3 million people. England scrum half Natasha Hunt is on the phone to chat about this potential watershed moment of the women's game. Hi, Mo, how are you?
Hey, yeah, really good, thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, no problem at all. Let's go back to Saturday night. I was there at the Kingspan. It was an absolutely brilliant game. What was it like to play in?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Like, the when we walked out for the anthem, even before that, when we walked out for the warm-up, the crowd was absolutely incredible. And we just got cheered off the pitch and then cheered back into the dugout. I've never been stood in an anthem quite like it, with so many people singing back at us. It was genuinely really quite emotional. And then, obviously, to get the start that we had was amazing. Gutted, absolutely devastated with the result. Like, still, it's really quite raw for me. But it was just unbelievable to be a part of such a spectacle for women's rugby.
How's the relationship with the New Zealand players? Because there's a fierce rivalry there, isn't there? I mean, it does seem at the moment in the women's game that you two teams are out on their own a little bit. And you know, you look at the previous results, it tends to be New Zealand or England. What's it like on the field?
Yeah, it's very fierce. I think to get to that level and to be as good as both of those teams are, you have to have fiercely competitive people all over the pitch. I'm definitely one of them, and I know a few others. But the girls themselves are really sound. Like, they're embedded with their rugby culture, which is just phenomenal. It is across any New Zealander that you meet, really. And off the pitch, everyone's proper sound. Like, all the girls are really quite, really quality and really nice girls to chat to. So off the pitch is absolutely fine, but on the pitch, there's definitely that little bit of a spark, I think, from both teams.
Mo, I'm just going to just stop you just a second. I mean, clearly they're competitors on the pitch, but I was hearing tales from back in 2010 when the Black Ferns won the World Cup that they were like waving their medals in some of the Red Roses' faces. So you're saying they're sound, but that doesn't sound like the kind of thing someone who's sound would actually do, if you know what I mean. So there is that bitter rivalry, and the fact that you guys are sharing the same hotel, so there must have been a little bit of niggle after the game.
Yeah, I think back in 2010, I wasn't involved in that campaign, and I had heard about it, but a lot of those girls that were involved in that incident have actually retired now, so I think that has definitely changed. And loads of the girls, the game's moved on, and loads of us have crossed over in 7s and 15s. So we know people a lot. Like, a lot of the backs have played against them on the 7s pitch and vice versa. So we're in the same hotel whenever we go away for 7s. And I think that's kind of changed the mentality a little bit, because you kind of have to get on. But like you said, it was a difficult pill to swallow when we were all getting back into the hotel that night and all our friends and family were queuing at the door, and then all of a sudden the Kiwis walk in with their medals around their necks, and it was quite a difficult one to look at, I'm not going to lie to you.
Well, if we move away from that disappointment now and try and shelve it, just, you mentioned what an amazing atmosphere it was, but you know, the huge TV audience that I mentioned before, where's the next stage for women's rugby now? Because the last sort of 18 months has been a huge leap forward in terms of exposure. I'm not talking about the actual standard of the play on the field, but now people are starting to take notice. Where would you like to see the game go next?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the last, like you say, 18 months is seen a massive shift in it. And we spoke about it after the last World Cup, that we wanted to get more viewers, we wanted it to be more accessible to people. And I think it hasn't really become that yet. So the World Cup, it was really accessible. We were on ITV prime time Saturday night. You couldn't have asked for anything better than that. But in terms of our domestic leagues and everything like that, it's still really quite grassroots. So for me, definitely it would be getting more sponsorship into the game, making sure that it's either accessible on television or for people to come and watch, and it's actually being like broadcast and people actually know what's going on, because I think that's something that we've struggled with in the women's game for quite a while now.
There's a new premiership starting, isn't there? I know sort of after 2003, all the premiership men's teams found there was a big upsurge in terms of attendances and things. Do you think that the combination of the two factors, the very successful World Cup and the new league starting, is that going to make a big difference?
I really hope so. Yeah, I really hope so. And obviously Tyrrell's coming on board and actually getting a decent sponsorship into it. The RFU are investing loads of money into the domestic game. So loads of that money is going into that instead of into obviously the contracts and stuff. And I just really hope that we can get that shift in terms of people buying into it, wanting to get involved, wanting to back the women's game, and then equally potentially seeing some maybe on television in the future.
See, I was there after the game and I was listening to Katie McLean, and she spoke really eloquently, and it was quite obvious how passionate she is about the game. And she almost sounded more disappointed about where the women's game is now more than actually losing the World Cup final. And her frustration, exactly what you've just said there, is after last World Cup where you guys won, you're desperately wanting that to be an uptake and people getting involved in the game, the way the women's game's been seen. It hasn't happened. You've had your contracts, and that's obviously helped with you guys. You've had an outstanding season, unbeaten up until the final, win a Grand Slam, finalists in the World Cup. But what needs to happen now to make a difference so that we're not having this conversation in 4 years' time about let's use this as a platform? Because that seems to be the narrative which we've used over the last 8 to 12 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, just like I've said, it would be people getting behind it and actually getting involved and sponsoring the game, because it's not, we don't have the money to do it ourselves.
So does it all come down to money then, do you think? Is that the starting point for it?
I think either it has to be a catalyst in terms of the money that's being put into the game, or the accessibility in terms of whether it's on television or anything like that, because I think one comes with the other. And when you get that, it's then going to obviously just boost it in terms of people wanting to come and watch, people wanting to get involved in the game, more people will want to get into the sponsorship, etc. And I'm not sure which one comes first, like chicken and egg, whether you need the money to then get the TV rights and getting people into the ground and actually paying to come and watch people play, or whether it comes the other way around and you get that accessibility, people see it, then people want to get involved and come and watch us play and see what we're about. And I genuinely don't know which way it needs to come first, but it definitely needs to be one or the other, I think.
Well, we'll see how things go during the next season with the Premiership. And good luck to you, Natasha. Thanks for coming on. And let's hope that next time we speak, we'll be talking about how much things have improved since this World Cup. So thanks very much.
Cheers, Mo.
Cheers, guys.
Okay, so one of the really interesting developments over the last couple of days, Hugo, has been this saliva test that is now being developed. We're in conjunction with the RFU, and there's a scientist that has led the way on this. I know that with my role on the Board of Trustees with Restart Rugby and the involvement with the RPA, that this has been coming for a while. We heard that the scientist had managed to narrow down that actually when you suffer trauma, the chemical makeup of your saliva changes. And he thought that he could narrow it down to the specific changes in the chemical structure when you'd had a concussion, which means you can automatically diagnose someone's had a concussion with a simple saliva test on the side of the pitch. Now, over the last sort of couple of years, 3 years, everyone in rugby has been trying to, you know, make this as safe as possible, make the sport as safe as possible in terms of concussion and the worry of what might happen in the future if we don't. We've had different views on it in the past, in that, you know, my thoughts with the HIA was it was never going to be perfect. And I still think this new system's not going to be perfect, because there will be times that someone has a concussion that it gets missed by everyone, including the player themselves, and they don't have the saliva test. But surely this now stops the sort of argument we were having, that you were saying, well, HIA should, you know, it's a disgrace that they haven't sort of been stuck to. And I was saying, but it's all about trying to make things better and we can't shout at the doctors if they get it wrong. This surely makes it a lot better for us.
And so let's focus on the process of it. So how long does it take to actually take the sample to be able to analyse it and determine whether that player is safe to go back on or has to be removed?
I think, this will surprise you, I'm not medically trained as much as I'd like to be. But I think from what we were told, it is fairly instant. I think you get instantaneous change in your saliva content. And then it becomes, how long does the test take? And the parameters, I mean, it's very, you know, it's potentially very confusing, but you then have to compare it against something else. So there are talks in this trial. It's only a trial at the moment. Yep. So it's not going to affect players coming on and off this year, but they're gathering the information, hopefully, to do it next year. You know, you will then have to compare it with someone who hasn't had a trauma to be able to see, because all sorts of things can affect what your saliva is like. It can be done within the time frame of an HIA, which this season has changed anyway to a mandatory 10 minutes so that they can do the full suite of questioning. But I'm thinking, I'm pretty sure that this test is quicker than going through all the questions and the whole protocol that they have to do for an HIA at the moment.
Yeah, it's important for people to realise and acknowledge the fact it's a trial. But either way, whether it works or not, it's great to see Prem Rugby, the RPA, Restart Rugby actually investing time and resource into trying to make the game safe. We absolutely love it, but we do also want to make sure that players' welfare is always paramount. Okay, so there's been some huge changes in the off-season to World Rugby. I think the biggest story has actually got to be in the Pro 12, or the Pro 12 become Pro 14, just in short, because, of course, if you listen to this and tune to BT Sport, you will know about these things. But essentially, it's two conferences. We've got two brand new teams, both coming from South Africa. There's going to be a couple of extra derby games. That's kind of the format of it. Sounds a little bit complicated, but I don't think it is. Similar system to what we see in Super Rugby with the conferences. But you firmly believe this could lead to something potentially a bit more global.
I think SANZAAR, who are the body that look after Australia, South Africa, Argentina and New Zealand, will be panicking about this. Because I know that in the past, Premiership rugby teams as a whole have spoken to the South African. Remember when the whole European row erupted and they didn't know whether there was going to be a European competition? Well, there was discussions that the French and the South Africans and the Premiership teams might get together and form their own competition. I know that South Africa aren't happy with the way Super Rugby is organised at the moment, because they have all that leaping across time zones. And it's very, very difficult. It's very tough on the players. They also feel that they are commercially very viable and they give everything, but they don't actually get much of a say in how it's run. So two teams on the same time zone playing up in Europe, where we know that because the World Cup, we know that commercially it's better in France and England than anywhere else in the world, must be a worry to SANZAAR. Because if it's a success, then a lot of the South African teams will be saying, well, why are we playing with these guys? Why don't we play with Europe?
Yep.
Will these two teams eventually, if they win the Pro 12 or Pro 14 as it is now, will they then qualify for the European Champions Cup and become the Champions Cup? So it could affect the global game, because if that was to happen, it would have a dent on New Zealand, South Africa, Argentina. It would have, I presume, a dent on their performance as a national team. Would it... It, in the terms of, we're trying to globalise the game and make it reach as far as possible, by pooling all the resources into one area, that spine through England, France and South Africa, does that stop that globalisation, and is it a threat to the game?
Thanks for listening this week. We're back next week with Northampton star Ben Foden in our studio as our special guest. Remember, the pod will be out every Thursday morning this season, so make sure you subscribe and get it delivered straight to your device. And if you've enjoyed it, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes.
But that's not all. We'll be live on Facebook and Twitter every Wednesday from 8 p.m. for the entire season. Also, watch out for Rugby Tonight on Tour as we visit rugby clubs across the land again new this season. And as for live match coverage, well, we're going to be busier than ever here at BT Sport.
The season kicks off for us Friday with Gloucester against Exeter from 7 p.m. And then on Saturday, we're at Twickenham for the London doubleheader with Saracens against Northampton. And then London Irish versus Quins back-to-back from 1:30. The weekend's then rounded off with Leicester Tigers against Bath Sunday at 2:30. And you can watch all the games live on BT Sport 1 in HD and 4K UHD.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.